QA Bible study. We're back to the QA, and I've had a little bit of a hiatus. Last week we had Manuel Estebani here. He did a great job. We left off talking about end times, and I don't see some of the folks that were asking me questions, so I'm ready to move on or move back or pick up where we left off. Whatever you need, everything is open on the table. No question is dumb or stupid, just a question you don't ask. And so this is a great time, too. I'm only going to be doing this for the next few weeks, and then we'll be going into a Christmas study around mid-November. We'll be looking at the life of Christ each Wednesday night leading up to Christmas, so it'll be a good time. And so we want to get the questions in so we get time to get them answered. So I'm just throwing it out there. Are there any questions? Anybody been studying something, read something, heard something? All right, you guys really do want to see the Royals tonight. I can see that. So, none at all. No questions dumb or stupid, just the question you don't ask. All right. I did have Caleb Larkham had a few questions, but I don't recall what they were. If he was here, I was going to have him ask them regarding what we talked about with the end times, the tribulation, and all of that, and our comparison of Matthew 24 and Revelation. Chapter 6. So, no questions at all. Am I going to just have to preach to you? I don't think we've had a Bible study without a question. All right. Well, it's not burning. Yeah. You got one? Oh, okay.
In Daniel.
Uh-huh. Daniel 2. Mm-hmm. Well, that's a great question. And the question is, in Daniel, he's referring to in Daniel 2, the first vision that Daniel receives it's not his. It's the first vision that Nebuchadnezzar receives. So turn to Daniel chapter 2, and we see it in Daniel 2. Really interesting. Let me ask you, how many of you are familiar with the story of Daniel 2? Some of you are, some of you aren't. Okay. Well, this is really good because I kept referencing Daniel when I was laying out those end times, and I even had some verses up there, but we really didn't get a lot of time to look at it because we were trying to keep it simple and clear. But much of what we understand about prophecy when we talk about that 7-year period actually is just a fulfillment of what started in Daniel. And before that, we find that Daniel is in captivity. Now, who is Daniel? Well, one of the things that we find is that Daniel is one of the princes of Israel. And when Nebuchadnezzar, who's the king, overtook Israel, he took these young men in. I won't get into all the story, but they were faithful young men. And they were counted in that Babylonian kingdom, and Babylon would be modern-day Iraq, that region there. They were counted as magicians, okay? And so they were counted among the those that had skill. In chapter 1, verse 17, it says, "And for those these four children, God gave them knowledge and skill and learning and wisdom, and Daniel had understanding in all visions and dreams." Daniel in particular was gifted, similar to Joseph, with this understanding of how to interpret visions and dreams. And so that's not unusual either, by the way, for those Hebrews, those Shemites, although until the Bible was fulfilled, to be able to do that. And so as this is interesting, as God is shutting down what God's doing with Israel, he's opening up what he's beginning to do with the times of the Gentiles. And so this vision, I'm going to just give you a synopsis so you can kind of get that in your head before we read it, and then we'll read it, and then we'll go back and I'll review what I just said. Okay, so just a quick thumbnail sketch of history. So what's going on in history is God has a plan for Israel. God is going to intended and still intends at some point yet future, Romans chapter 11, I alluded to that several weeks ago, but I know you've slept since then, to use the nation of Israel. That is his chosen people. He's made promises to them. He made promises to David in particular that throne would go on forever. His throne would go on forever. And so God is planning on using Israel to reach the Gentile nations. He has a plan to use the nation of Israel to reach the world, the Gentile world. Jeremiah, even the prophet who was a contemporary of Daniel, actually records that as well. So God's always intended that. Unfortunately, Israel, the kings, the leadership of Israel, the elders of Israel, would not cooperate. Especially the kings of Israel would not cooperate with God, and that is why they were taken into captivity. Later on in Daniel chapter 7, Daniel chapter 9, Daniel chapter 11, it all unfolds as Daniel is praying over the captivity, the time that they've been taken into captivity. God continues to unfold and give him continual revelation about how God's going to restore the kingdom up until the time of Nehemiah, all the way up until the time of Christ, all the way up until the time that's yet to come, which we studied is that last 7 years, Daniel's 70th week. That's why we call it Daniel's 70th week. All right, so what's really important, that's not the question. I'm just kind of giving you an overview of Daniel, and that's a real quick thumbnail sketch. When we get to Daniel chapter 2, right now, historically, Israel is under the rule now of Nebuchadnezzar, and he has had Hebrew kings, surrogates of his, Jehoiakim, who was reigning, and then he rebelled against Nebuchadnezzar, and Nebuchadnezzar took him out. It is around that time, when Uzziah was on the throne, that God was given a revelation to Nebuchadnezzar. And he was communicating to him what was yet to come with the Gentile nations. And I'll play out this picture for you here in just a second. And we have the exact time frame. What's really cool about the book of Daniel, when I've talked to an atheist not too long ago, a man who came to this church who rejected Jesus and the gospel and went on to throw the Bible under the bus and say, well, you know, and of course he runs back to the seven-day creation and say, it's impossible. And I say, okay, well, I'm not going to argue that with you because I know where you're going to go and we're going to agree to disagree. But what I would like you to consider is the book of Daniel. I'd like you to consider the book of Daniel, complete with dates, complete with prophecy that has been fulfilled to the letter, all the way up to the upcoming prophecy that's yet to happen. And you tell me how that book that has now been historically substantiated to have been written when it said and continues, archaeology continues to confirm what we already knew, how is that possible without a divine author, divine influence for an atheist? And of course, he can't answer that question because really he hasn't taken the time to give the Bible the benefit of the doubt. But when you take the time to look at a book like Daniel, book of Nehemiah, Esther, it's incredible what God has preserved for us. So Daniel chapter 2, let's just look at it. It says, in the second year of the reign of Nebuchadnezzar, so we even know the time frame, his second year, he dreamed dreams wherein his spirit was troubled and his sleep break from him. Then the king commanded to call the magicians and the astrologers and the sorcerers and the Chaldeans for to show the king his dreams. So they came and stood before the king. And the king said unto them, I have dreamed a dream, and my spirit was troubled to know the dream. Then spake the Chaldeans to the king in Syriac, O king, live forever. Tell thy servants the dream, and we will show the interpretation. The king answered and said to the Chaldeans, the thing is gone from me. If you will not make known unto me the dream with the interpretation thereof, you shall be cut in pieces, and your houses shall be made a dunghill. But if you show the dream and the interpretation thereof, you shall receive of me gifts and rewards and great honor. Therefore, show me the dream and the interpretation thereof. They answered again and said, let the king tell his servants the dream, and we will show the interpretation of it. The king answered and said, I know of a certainty that ye would gain the time, because you see the thing is gone from me. But if ye will not make known unto me the dream, there is but one decree for you. For ye have prepared lying and corrupt words to speak before me till the time be changed. Therefore tell me the dream, and I shall know that ye can show me the interpretation thereof. And the Chaldeans answered before the king and said, there is not a man upon the earth, notice that, that can show the king's matter. So they make this audacious, audacious request. You tell me not just what the dream is, I'm just going to tell you, tell me what I dreamt. I'm not going to tell you what my dream was. You just tell me what I dreamt, and then I want you to interpret that. Huh? They're saying, King, that's crazy. Nobody has ever done that. There is not a man on the earth. Not a man on the earth. All right? Therefore, there is no king, lord, nor ruler that asketh such a thing of any magician or astrologer or Chaldean. Well, amen. Well, I'm glad you're going to pull up to a prophet right here named Daniel. Not an astrologer, not a magician, not a Chaldean. Okay, verse 11. And it is a rare thing that the king requireth, and there is none other that can show it before the king except, notice this, the gods, small g, whose dwelling is not with flesh. By the way, those same gods that they were worshiping in mystery Babylon religion are still being worshiped today, but that's a whole other Bible study. For this cause, the king was angry and very furious and commanded to destroy all the wise men of Babylon. And the decree went forth, and the wise men should be slain. And they sought Daniel and his fellows to be slain. Then Daniel answered with counsel and wisdom to Arioch, the captain of the king's guard, which was gone forth to slay the wise men of Babylon. And he answered and said to Arioch, the king's captain, why is the decree so hasty from the king? Then Arioch made the thing known to Daniel. Then Daniel went in, and by the way, before I pause there in verse 16, notice Daniel was not among the magicians. He was somewhere else, right? He's like, what's going on? Right? What's going on? But he was counted as a wise man of Babylon, verse 14. Verse 15, so he said, or verse 16, then Daniel went in and desired the king that he would give him time and that he would show the king the interpretation. Then Daniel went to his house and made the thing known to Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Those are also known as Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego. Those were his companions. All right, verse 18. That they would desire mercies of God of heaven concerning this secret, that Daniel and his fellows should not perish with the rest of the wise men of Babylon. Then was the secret revealed unto Daniel in a night vision. Then Daniel blessed the God of heaven, capital G. Daniel answered and said, blessed be the name of God forever and ever, for wisdom and might are his. And he changeth the times and the seasons. And he removeth kings and setteth up kings. He giveth wisdom unto the wise and knowledge to them that know understanding. He revealeth the deep things, or the deep and secret things. He knoweth what is in the darkness, and the light, and the light dwelleth with him. I thank thee and praise thee, O God of my fathers, who hast given me wisdom and might and made known unto me now what we desired of thee. For thou hast now made known unto us the king's matter. Therefore Daniel went in unto Arioch, whom the king had ordained to destroy the wise men of Babylon. He went and said unto him, destroy not the wise men of Babylon. Bring me in before the king, and I will show unto the king the interpretation. And Arioch brought in Daniel before the king in haste, and said unto him, I have found a man of the captain, or the captives of Judah, that will make known unto the king the interpretation. The king answered and said to Daniel, whose name was Belteshazzar, art thou able to make known unto me the dream which I have seen and the interpretation thereof? Daniel answered in the presence of the king and said, the secret which the king hath demanded, cannot the wise men, the astrologers, the magicians, the soothsayers show unto the king? But there is, here it comes, there is a God in heaven that revealeth secrets and maketh known to the king Nebuchadnezzar what shall be in the latter days. Thy dream and thy visions of thy head be upon thy bed are these. As for thee, O king, thy thoughts came into thy mind upon thy bed, what should come to pass hereafter. And he that revealeth secrets maketh known to thee what shall come to pass. But as for me, this secret is not revealed to me for any wisdom that I have, more than any living, but for their sakes that shall make known the interpretation to the king, and that thou mightest know the thoughts of thy heart. Thou, O king, sawest and behold great things. This great image, whose brightness was excellent, stood before thee, and the form thereof was terrible. This image's head was of fine gold, and his breast and his arms of silver, his belly and his thighs of brass, his legs of iron, and his feet part iron and part clay. Thou sawest till a stone was cut out without hands, which smote the image upon his feet, and were that were of iron and clay and break them into pieces. This is the image you're referring to, right? And it was on the copy of paper I handed out. Then was the iron and the clay, the brass, the silver, the gold broken into pieces together and became like the chaff of the summer threshing floors. And the wind carried them away that no place was found for them. And the stone that smote the image became a great mountain and filled the whole earth. This is the dream, and we will tell the interpretation thereof before the king. Now let me just pause there. I'm sure about this time the king was going, huh? Right? Here's the dream. Here it is. Now I'm not only going to tell you what you dreamt, I'm going to tell you what it means, right? So before I move on, I'm going to do a bad job of trying to draw this, all right? But I'm going to attempt it right quick. There's a lot of images out there, if you Google it up today, that you can get a hold of. But you're going to find this image. I'm going to draw a head here, which kind of looks like an alien head. And he's going to have a thick neck, because I want him to. And, he's got arms. And let's see, I'm thinking of how this goes together. Head of gold. And then he's got a... Let me go back over this. Fine gold breasts. So I need to give him a waist here. So let's just say he's crossing his arms. So that's a bad shoulder, though. We need to come out here. There we go. And we'll get rid of that. And that arm's kind of messed up, so we'll get rid of that. You guys are glad you came, huh? And then, so we need to get his girdle, though, because his girdle's important. And the thighs are important on this guy. And then, of course, he's got some knees, and then he's got some feet, which are important here in the story. He's got big calves that are kind of cankles. So this guy's got some cankles, man. I don't know about that. Yeah, the toes. Those are some ugly toes, I'll tell you that. But let's see. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. All right. So we don't have Goliath here. All right. So all right. That's going to be my start. All right, so this is what we're seeing as this image. And he's seeing this image, and then we see a stone also. And in chapter 2, the stone cut out of the mountain. And I've lost my spot. There it is. And this stone comes down. I'm just going to draw a stone. And it comes down. Here we go. And it's heading down here toward his feet, which is interesting. Now, I'll lay this out in another way here in a minute. We'll pick it up. But it just kind of gives you an idea. Now, the head, what was the head? All right, the head's gold. And then we have, what else do we have here? Silver. Brass. Then we got iron, right? And then we have iron mixed with clay. Yeah. And this is the stone. Okay. And forgive me for abbreviating here, but that kind of gave us the idea. Now, we'll pick this up in a minute. I'm going to go back over here and read, and then we'll pick up this image. So we've got that. That's the vision. That's the dream. It probably had eyes and a chin. That's the biggest head. I think he plays football for the... That just totally looks like an alien. We're going to have to erase his head. I'm telling you, I can't abide that. All right, so here we go. All right, now we got an egghead. All right, so this guy here, he's happy. All right, so there we go. Yeah, I can't draw that good. So She's got it all queued up. You probably got it on your phones in the back. All right, so let's go ahead and press forward. So now we're in verse 36. That's the image, and with a big head. And so verse 36, this is the dream, and we will tell the interpretation thereof. Hey, can you just dial that up and show it on the screen? Ron? No, I know you can't. I'm kidding. Okay, so this is the dream, and we will tell the interpretation thereof before the king. Thou, O king, art a king of kings, for the God of heaven hath given thee a kingdom, power, and strength, and glory. Wheresoever the children of men dwell, the beasts of the field and the fowls of heaven hath he given into thine hand, and hath made thee ruler over them all. And that's really incredible, right? Because God's made, this is true. At this time in history, Nebuchadnezzar was the ruler over the world. He was the world ruler. So that's important. And so who's the head? Well, he told us right here, the head is Babylon, right? It's Nebuchadnezzar, and it's a man, right? So the head of gold, it's Nebuchadnezzar. I'm just going to go Neb and period, all right? And it is Babylon. All right, so we know the answer to that. So we just keep reading. It's amazing how the Bible defines itself. And after that shall arise another kingdom inferior to thee, and a third kingdom of brass, which shall bear rule over the earth, and a fourth kingdom shall be strong as iron, for as much as iron breaketh in pieces and subdueth all things, and as iron that breaketh all these shall it break in pieces and shall bruise. And whereas thou sawest the feet and the toes, part potter's clay and part of iron, the kingdom shall be divided, but there shall be in it of the strength of iron, for as much as thou sawest the iron mixed with miry clay. And as the toes of the feet were part of iron and part of clay, so the kingdom shall be partly strong and partly broken. Excuse me. Hey, Ron, can you mute? So the kingdom's going to be partly strong, partly strong, partly broken, partly strong and partly broken. Verse 42. Verse 43. And whereas thou sawest iron mixed with clay, with miry clay, I should say, they shall mingle themselves with the seed of men, throwing you back to Genesis 6, but they shall not cleave one to another, even as iron is not mixed with clay. In the days of the king shall the God of heaven set up a kingdom which shall never be destroyed, the millennial reign, and the kingdom shall not be left to other people, but it shall break in pieces and consume all the kingdoms, and it shall stand forever, which ties us into Revelation. For as much as thou sawest that the stone was cut out of the mountain with man's without hands, and that it break in pieces the iron, the brass, the clay, the silver, the gold, the great God hath made known to the king what shall come to pass hereafter, and the dream is certain, and the interpretation thereof sure. Okay, so there's no questioning. Then King Nebuchadnezzar fell upon his face and worshiped Daniel and commanded that they should offer an oblation, sweet odors unto him. That is so incredible that he did that. Amazing. The king answered unto Daniel and said, of a truth, it is that your God is a God of gods, and the Lord of kings, and a revealer of secrets, seeing that thou couldest reveal this secret. Then the king made Daniel a great man, and gave him many great gifts, and made him ruler over the whole province of Babylon, and chief of the governors over all the wise men of Babylon. Then Daniel requested of the king that he set Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego over the affairs of the province of Babylon, but Daniel sat in the gate of the king. So in this essence, he became the man that sat in the king's stead at the gate. Okay, I'm going to have to take a drink real quick. Now, let me give you more breakdown on this. So what he's really doing is giving us a succession of kings. And I'm looking at my marginal notes here for the dates. I'm not sure I have the dates for all these. But Pam Jackson has them, because I just gave them to her in our dispensations class in HBI. But the next kingdom that we're that he's talking about, Babylon, as you guys know, Assyria, which is modern-day, also modern-day Babylon, 586 BC, comes in and Actually, let me rephrase that. In 606 BC, strike what I just said. In 606 BC, Nebuchadnezzar comes in and defeats and takes over Judah. But in 586, he destroys it, and it's all over with the kings of the nation of Israel. And so his kingdom lasts through the life of Daniel. But in Daniel's lifetime, within 70 years, it's going to be turned over to another kingdom. And how do we know that? Well, because we got the record in Daniel, but we also have the record in history. And we know, anybody know, just for grins, what kingdom comes next? Right, Medo-Persia. So the Medes, the Medo-Persian, where, by the way, is Persia? Right. That is Iran, modern-day Iran. And so the Medo-Persian Empire ends up coming in, which is the one that's why Cyrus was king, Darius, and then
Alexander.
Hold up. Who's the guy that went in and spoke to Nehemiah? Artaxerxes was on the throne. Nehemiah was the cupbearer. All of that ties into this time and the Medo-Persian Empire. So all those dates are established. That empire, this was an absolute dictatorship, by the way. Babylon rose from Nebuchadnezzar. He was a man who rose into power from his youth. He kind of reminds you a little bit of like Hitler. And he just ended up eclipsing the earth. It's amazing. The Medo-Persian Empire, you've probably heard of the laws, right, of the Medes, right? They were a people of law and law and order, and so that's what the whole book of Esther is about. And so they come in and they establish order, and they did what they thought couldn't be done. That the walls of Babylon, I forget the dimensions, I'm going off of my memory, but they were so big, they could literally, and I'm not making this up, have chariot races. They were like 50 yards, 100 yards, amazing width. And it was thought to be impregnable. And so for a long time, many thought that the account of Daniel chapter 5, I believe it's Daniel chapter 5, when Belshazzar, the king, made a great feast. A lot of people thought, oh, that wasn't true. But in the last, since I've been saved, last 25 years, they've actually uncovered evidence that actually everything that went down in Babylon went down exactly as recorded in the Bible. Whoa, amazing. So a lot of your skeptical, you read an older Bible commentaries by a bunch of guys that are educated beyond their intelligence, and they'll tell you that Belteshazzar in chapter 5, well, that really wasn't, that's just really made up because Daniel was written after the fact and all that, and now they're finding out, oops, they were wrong. They actually found records, guess where, in the Medo-Persian Empire to document what the Bible says, and they have found the name of Belteshazzar now. So, hallelujah, we already knew that, so nothing new to us. But anyway, moving on. So, that happened just as it said, and then this next kingdom that comes is Greece, which is interesting, too, because the Greek Empire, when they're receiving this vision, is nothing, in essence. It's a bunch of city-states where modern-day Greece is, still Greece. There are people just running around city-states. They're not a major world power. And yet, in Daniel, I forget which chapter, chapter 7, I believe, when Daniel's praying, and Gabriel's like, hey, I got to go talk to the prince of Grecia. It's in Daniel chapter 10. He goes, I'm gone forth in verse 20, and lo, I've gone forth, lo, the prince of Grecia shall come. At the time of Daniel chapter 11, Greece was not a world power. But yet it's mentioned in Daniel. Why? Because it's going to be a world power. It was already in Daniel's vision, or actually Nebuchadnezzar's dream that Daniel was able to interpret. And of course, we know the great the great conqueror that came out of Greece, and they brought, I'm looking here in my notes, they brought the Greece, they conquered the world, and they brought the philosophy, and it helped their mindset. Okay, I'm looking at my notes, they're pretty small, and I'm getting older now, I can't hardly see them. You know what I wish I had in this Bible, and I don't have it? That would have been Alexander. Alexander the Great. And he, you know what he was going to do, by the way, just a side note? and that would have been around, I'm just, my numbers are rough. You may have that chart there. Was it 300 B.C.? Are you looking that up, Bobby? What? You don't have it there. 300 B.C. What? Yeah, Ron? 330 B.C. Is when he conquered. And I don't have my dates in my Bible margin. I thought I did. But when he went and conquered, he didn't have anywhere else to go. He conquered the whole world. He's like, man, I want somebody to fight. I want a real battle. One of his objectives was to go to Jerusalem, which is always a thorn in any world empire's side, even then, because it's God's established people and his established city. And he went to Jerusalem, and he was going to take it over. And he had a vision in the night, similar to like Babylon. And they said, don't do it. So he didn't do it. And I'm getting a little fuzzy on the details, but he ended up sparing Jerusalem because it wasn't God's program to destroy it. And so... then we move on to, tell me what iron is. Anybody know? Rome, right. So this is the Roman Empire. All right, and iron, and they ruled the world like iron. The Greeks, they brought, oh, by the way, I need to draw the thighs, or the girdle. And here, let's do this. It's got his shorts on. And then the iron, right? Then the iron mixed with clay. Are those toes, and I'll show you those toes here in just a minute. So Rome is the kingdom that came successively after the Greeks, and then the Roman Empire rose and is prominent. And now you have this prophecy about the iron mixed with clay that takes you all the way to the coming. Of course, this is the Lord Jesus Christ. One of the key words that we saw in chapter 2 is the latter times. And if you were in a Sunday morning in First Timothy, you will remember, which I know some of you have slept since then, that I mentioned that the latter times are not the last days, because in the last days, perilous times will come. And the reason I told you that the last times are not the last days is, and I think I actually took you back to Daniel, and I said, Daniel chapter 2, that it was discussed in Daniel chapter 2. Now, why did I say that? Well, because what this image is about is what we call the times of the Gentiles. And this is why we're sticklers with the authorized version, because you don't want to get these phrases confused. Because there's another phrase that we use. All right, now this is the time of the Gentiles, this whole image, times of the Gentiles. There's the times of the Gentiles, and then there is what we call the fullness of the Gentiles. And we find that in Romans chapter 11. I'll give you the reference once I find it. All right. Now, the times of the Gentiles, and I need my reference on the times of the Gentiles, but I don't have it off the top of my head. I probably have it right here if I look for it. If anybody can help me with that, that'll be fine, but I'm not going to get caught up in it right now. The times of the Gentiles is the time of the kingdom, the kingdoms of the earth. What's unique is up until Nebuchadnezzar, God was working through who to establish his kingdom on the earth? Israel. Now, Israel struggled. We know that in the time of Judges. But under Solomon, the apex of the kingdom, Solomon actually had a ring of peace. Second Chronicles records that his kingdom literally was worldwide. It was a picture of what God intended to do with Israel, but they weren't obedient. Solomon himself, who we often liken to Christ because there was peace in Israel, is also likened to the Antichrist, because you know what else Solomon did? He had many wives and he brought in idolatry, and he destroyed Israel's opportunity, and the kingdom split under Rehoboam and Jeroboam. And so the potential that Israel had under Solomon, David a type of Christ, right? David's a type of Jesus. Solomon a type of the Antichrist. But anyway, that's your next class, next trimester's types. And so Solomon ends up, he obviously was a good king in some senses, but in an anti-type sense, he's a picture of really the demise, because of his idolatry, of Israel and their inability to fulfill the prophecies that God intended. Now, God's gracious, and he kept offering it and working with the kings, and we understand all that. But we know successively that they did not obey God. They did not keep his Sabbaths. They did not keep the feasts as they were supposed to, and that's why God judged them. That's what Jeremiah the prophet recorded. That's what Daniel was praying about in Daniel chapter 9. And that's why Daniel finally realized the times. And he's like, hey, man, God, I see what's going on here, but are we actually going to be able to fulfill the prophecy? Because I don't see any revival. I don't see any life in Israel. And that's when the messenger was sent. As soon as I heard your prayer, Daniel, I came. And then he just lays it out in even more detail what's going to happen to the nation of Israel from the time of Babylon, and he skips right up into the end times leading up to Jesus Christ and gets to the coming. He really just skips up to this rock who comes and destroys the kingdom and fills in the details. And so as you go through the book of Daniel, there's more and more prophecy that unfolds, giving us more and more information. And so, but to stay on the track tonight, it's important that we see that these kingdoms lasted. Now, what's interesting is iron and this iron mixed with clay. When you look in the text in the book of Daniel chapter 2, let me get back there. I lost my spot. In Daniel chapter 2, we see that this, Amy, we're not going to get done at 7:30. So I just want to let you know. We were talking about that. Are you going to get done by 7:30 for the game? I said, sure, maybe not. Okay, so Daniel chapter 2 in verse you see that there's this miry clay in verse 41. This fourth kingdom, I'll go to verse 40. This fourth kingdom, which is Rome, it says, this fourth kingdom shall be strong as iron, for as much as iron breaketh in pieces and subdueth all things, and iron that breaketh all things shall break in pieces and bruise. And whereas thou sawest the feet and the toes, part potter's clay and part of iron, the kingdom shall be divided, but there shall be in it of strength of iron, for as much as thou sawest the iron mixed with clay. Now, each one of these kingdoms brought something to the table. Nebuchadnezzar was the first world Gentile leader that conquered the world. And then after that, the Medo-Persians, they brought the law, and they brought in military as well. The Greeks, they brought in a whole mindset. The Greek language, the Greek culture dominated. If you read the Gospels, that's what they were concerned about, the Sadducees, the influence of the Greek culture. And then the iron grip of Rome, literally, this is reflected. And by the way, the Greeks used brass in their military. They were using brass. The Romans brought iron. And so with each one of these successively, the military power increased. Rome, however, it started off as a democracy, iron mixed with clay. It was a place of the people, but it ended up as what? A dictatorship, a fascist government under Caesar's, and that's how it ends up. And so eventually, it breaks off. It becomes the Holy Roman Empire in 365, and then it breaks off. Constantinople to the east, Rome to the west. You know what? It has two legs, right? So you have the east, and you have west. And you got 10 toes, iron mixed with clay. And so there's a lot of things that just happen historically. And this mentions it in verse 41, where it says, "And whereas thou sawest the feet and the toes," goes down to the toes, "part clay and part iron, the kingdom shall be divided, but there shall be in it of the strength of iron, for as much as thou sawest the iron mixed with miry clay. And as the toes of the feet were part iron and part clay, so the kingdom shall be partly strong and partly broken. And wherein thou sawest the iron mixed with miry clay, they shall mingle themselves with the seed of men, but they shall not cleave one to another, even as iron is not mixed with clay. And in the days of these kings shall the God of heaven set up a kingdom which shall never be destroyed, and the kingdom shall not be left to other people, but it shall break in pieces and consume all the kingdoms and shall stand forever." Now, Shane asked at the end of his question, what does this have to do with the book of Revelation? All right? Well, if you see some of the charts, you'll see these 10 toes. If you look at Daniel's chart, they'll lay out this image. I'm just going to kind of try to lay it out here in some way that's, you know, messed up. But you see this image and the heads and the arm, right? And then you'll see these toes, and they'll stretch the toes out, this chart, all the way through 10,000 years of history. Have anyone ever seen a chart like that? You need to look at a good chart where you'll see that. And we have it in our resource center. It's an old book written before Israel was a nation, 1913, 1918, by a draftsman theologian named Clarence Larkin, who has all this stuff. What I love about his book is he lays it out before it happened. He's like Daniel. He lays out all of the issues. He lays out the times of the Gentiles, but not just historically, but he gets into where it's going up to this day. It's amazing. It's amazing to me primarily because before Israel was a nation in 1918, he was charting it out. He had it all already laid out. I just get fired up thinking about that. For me to lay it out today, it's pretty easy. I watch the news. I see what's going on. I know what Russia's doing. I know what Syria's doing. I understand all these prophecies are coming to pass. You'd have to be an idiot to miss it today. So it's not a big thing. But for those guys, I love it because they were seeing what was happening just because they believed God's word, as it is in truth, the very words of God. In his chart, which is, I think, it's probably about 1913, it was before 1918, I think, he lays out 2,000 years of history. What's cool about that is a lot of your theology that's not biblical, they give up on the prophecy. They say, well, Jesus really isn't going to return, and Rome really isn't, Revelation's not going to happen literally. It was all figurative. But if you take the Bible literally until you can't, which is a principal Bible study, it's going to be fulfilled more literally than we ever imagined. And so Clarence Larkin just took the Bible literally. He stretches out Rome from its inception before Christ was even born, right? Rome was in charge when Christ was born. They've been in charge, and forgive me for not having my dates established here, but they ended up, I can tell you, when they broke, Rome was it started off as a pagan Roman Empire, and then around 365 is when it became, in quotes, Holy Roman Empire, which it wasn't very holy with Constantine, and then and then it broke up to east and west. And in 800 AD, Charlemagne he melded it with the kingdoms in Europe. In 800 AD, Charlemagne becomes the first ordained dictator. Literally, he comes in, the Pope lays hands on him, and he becomes anointed by Rome. At that point, the Holy Roman Empire now anoints the monarchs of Europe. So they have control over the king, because if you want to have authority on the earth, you need to go through the Holy Roman Church, the Catholic Church. And so all of that's being laid out throughout the last couple of thousand years. And that's what the Reformation was for, because they realized there was nothing holy about that situation, and they started to break away. The whole time, though, there's Bible believers, just like Paul, just like Timothy, all the way through those church ages, and that's a whole other Bible study. But all of that leads us through this times of the Gentiles. Rome has been influential. And mark it down. Always been influential. And will be influential. Up until the time of Revelation chapter 17. Until midway through the tribulation period. She is the one. She is the one who's going to give power and bring in and usher in Antichrist. We know that actually from Daniel. And we also know it from the book of Revelation. She also will be destroyed. She's going to have 10 kings that she works with to help bring him in. 7 heads, right? Out of those 10 nations are going to rise 7. And then out of one, then there'll be one called a little horn. That little horn's going to rise up. That's the Antichrist. And he is going to bring world peace for a short season and bring us into that 7-year period that we talked about a few weeks ago. And he's going to use these 7 nations, which I know you can't see that, those 7 nations, and those 7 heads, I should say. And then he is going to destroy. Just quickly turn with me to Revelation chapter 17. And I'll get you up to date. I got 15 minutes to get you pulled up to date on how this works out. Now, throughout history, just for those of you that are catching up, Heartland Baptist Fellowship is not a Protestant church. Did you know that? We're not Protestants around here. So I just want you to know that. You say, what? No. You know why we're not a Protestant church? Because we're not protesting Rome. Peter was not the first pope, first of all. Rome has never been a biblical church, other than the one written to Romans, of course, but that's not the one we're talking about here. The Holy Roman Empire, Constantine, is simply, he just threw religion on top of a Roman rule and has just run it out. The only city-state, you know, the smallest nation in the world today, representing the United Nations, anybody know? Rome, Vatican. Vatican is a nation.
She's richer than any country in the world.
Yeah. And there's a lot of prophecy. Now, I don't want to make anyone mad, and I'm not mad at the Pope. Pope's welcome if he wants to come to church here. I'll preach to him. I mean, no problem. But the point is that we're not protesting Rome. We're Bible believers. Rome is not going to be reformed. So I'm not going to waste my breath or my time reforming Rome. Rome, as a matter of fact, doctrinally says I'm a heretic. And the laws that were enacted in the 1800s in Spain, called the Spanish Inquisitions, are still on the books for people like me. And if you want to run down to Chiapas, Mexico, we can get a little flavor of what that's like today. Because they still persecute and kill Christians that believe the Bible in Chiapas under the name of Rome. And you say, oh, no. Oh, yes. That's the truth. You don't hear that on the news because they're not going to tell you. I'm not mad about it. That's just how it's always been. I respect Ian Paisley and those guys that have been fighting against Rome. They're still walking in the UN. Of course, that was 30, 40 years ago. Walks in the UN. The Pope is the Antichrist, you know. And they're fighting a battle from the 1500s, and they're still fighting it today. And God bless them. We have a lot. We owe a lot to the reformers. But before Martin Luther got a hold of it, where do you think Martin Luther figured it out? Right? From Waldensians, Albigensians. And if you ever go to HBI in our church history course, I'll actually give you documentation that you can go find in Cambridge today of before Tyndale even translated the Bible in English. There were Bible preaching men of God, just like us, that were not part of Rome, preaching on the streets, turning England upside down before Tyndale ever got a hold of it. And so, anyway, I'm getting off on a little rant here, but I just kind of want you to know that because some people don't understand that. The reason that we stick Baptists, we keep Baptists on the door out front here, is not because we're part of a denominational group alone. It's because Rome gave us that name, Anabaptists. We wouldn't baptize the babies because we thought people had to have freedom of conscience to decide to choose to trust Christ as their Lord and Savior. And there was a lot of different names for them. So I want you to understand that, because the Holy Roman Empire is just Babylon mystery religion. That's why the gods that are being talked about in chapter 2, that Babylon's talking about, Nebuchadnezzar's talking about, are still venerated in St. Peter's Basilica. And those saints are nothing more than the pagan deities that you're going to find in Brazil, that you're going to find in Africa, that you're going to find in Hinduism. They're the same small g gods that were being worshipped in Babylon. In the Church of Pergamos, actually it was before Christ, my recollection is right, there was a deal made with Babylon and Rome. The priesthood of Babylon religion literally was relocated to a town called Pergamum. Pergamum, at that place, was then later relocated to a city called Rome. Pergamum then moved its Babylonian priesthood to Rome, and that's where the College of Cardinals was set up. It existed before that was under the pagan Roman Empire. That's before there was a Christian Roman Empire. And so that mystery Babylon religion can be traced from Babylon to Pergamum to Rome. And actually, the building where they met is still there today in Rome, in the ancient city. And so that's how far back that stuff goes. The religion still goes forward, and we have all that. That's going to be part of what happens in these end times. Now we're in Revelation chapter 17. Antichrist is raging, and things are blowing and going. And let's pick up what John sees, Revelation chapter 17. And there came one of the seven angels, which had seven vials, and talked with me, saying unto me, come hither, and I will show unto thee the judgment of the great whore that sitteth upon many waters, with whom the kings of the earth have committed fornication, and the inhabitants of the earth have been made drunk with the wine of her fornication. So he carrieth me away in the spirit into the wilderness, and I saw a woman sit upon scarlet-colored beast, full of names of blasphemy, having seven heads and ten horns, just so we don't miss it. This is a whorish woman who we also know from other places in the book of Revelation, or has ushered the Antichrist into power. And so we're not going to reform her, I promise you. And so verse 3, so he carried me away in the spirit into the wilderness, and I saw a woman sit upon scarlet-colored beast, full of the names of blasphemy, having seven heads and ten horns. Verse 4, and the woman was arrayed in purple and scarlet, purple's royalty, scarlet color, and decked with the gold and precious stones and pearls, having a golden cup in her hand, full of abominations and filthiness of her fornication. And upon her forehead was a name written, Mystery, Babylon the Great, Mother of Harlots and Abominations of the Earth. And I saw the woman drunken with the blood of the saints and with the blood of the martyrs of Jesus. And when I saw her, I wondered with great admiration. Excuse me. And the angel said unto me, wherefore didst thou marvel? I will tell thee the mystery of the woman and of the beast that carrieth her, which hath seven heads and ten horns. The beast that thou sawest was and is not, and shall ascend out of the bottomless pit and go into perdition. You guys remember a few weeks ago, I talked about who? The son of perdition. Same name as Judas. Antichrist is his name in 2 Thessalonians. And they will dwell on the earth, and they that dwell on the earth shall wonder, whose names are not written in the book of life from the foundation of the world, when they behold the beast that was and is not and yet is. And here is the mind which hath wisdom. The seven heads are seven mountains on which the woman sitteth, and there are seven kings, five are fallen, and one is, and the other is not yet come. And when he cometh, he must continue a short space. And the beast that was and is not, even he is the eighth, and is of seven, and goeth into perdition. And the ten horns which thou sawest are ten kings, which have received no kingdom as yet, but receive power as kings 1 hour with the beast. These have one mind and shall give their power and strength unto the beast. These shall make war with the Lamb, and the Lamb shall overcome them. That's our rock coming down to to destroy those 10 kings and their kingdoms and their heads. And it says, verse 14, and they that are with him are called the chosen and faithful. Verse 15, and he saith unto me, the waters which thou sawest where the whore sitteth, what are they? Well, they're peoples and multitudes and nations and tongues. Right? So she's sitting upon the peoples of the world. Her influence is global. And the 10 horns which thou sawest upon the beast, these shall hate the whore and shall make her desolate and naked and eat her flesh and burn her with fire. Now, this is what I want you to see. The 10 horns which thou sawest, they're going to turn. We saw in verse 12, look at verse 12, and the 10 horns which thou sawest are what? 10 kings. So these kings that ride in with this harlot that helps bring the kingdom in, who today sets up kings and takes them down. If you want to be a king outside of, remember King Henry, what did he have to do? He had to leave the Roman Catholic Church. To do that, he had to go to war and start his own church. That's the Anglican Church, which is just another bastard version of the old church, right? And so that church, if you wanted to be powerful as a king and in the world, you had to have her blessing because of Charlemagne. Else, she will send her armies to destroy you because you're not ordained of God. That's why some really wise guys said, let's like just separate this church and state thing out here. We don't need that. Well, the United States is unique, by the way. But that's a whole other message. I could go on and on about that. So up until the time of the American Revolution, that's how it worked. The United States is one of the few nations that could ever break away from that harlot. And we did the one thing that no other nation other than Israel could do, and that is we did not replace her with something that was, you know, similar. And that's why God has blessed the USA. And so many people today are totally oblivious to all that. But our own founding fathers knew these things, and that's why they were not about to join up with her or the Church of England. They were going to limit those powers. All right. And that's, by the way, why we are not out to take over the city physically. Because the Puritans tried that, and it didn't work very good on the East Coast. And that's why Providence, Rhode Island was established in the First Baptist Church. United States with the help of the Native American Indians, because a man was fleeing religious persecution from a group of people who were legislating morality instead of allowing the Holy Spirit of God to do it. So that church is still active today in Providence, Rhode Island. And he, why it's called Providence, because God provided it. So it's good to know your American history too, because it all ties into this. So these 10 horns, these 10 kings, notice this, they destroy that woman which setteth which thou sawest, which is that great city which reigneth over the kings of the earth. Well, is that when Jesus comes back? No, that's before Jesus comes back. What happens to Babylon? Well, you got to read chapter 18. Because it all goes back to Babylon. You got a new king in town. Remember he sat on the throne saying that he's God? He doesn't care about his bride. Total opposite of what Jesus does. Jesus died on the cross for his bride. The Antichrist gets his power, looks at his buddies, go get her, and kills her. Why? Because he says, I'm God. We don't need her anymore. And then he goes on as the vials are being poured out to fight against God. Then in Revelation 18, after these things, I saw another angel come down from heaven having great power, and the earth was lightened with his glory, and cried mightily with a strong voice, saying, Babylon the great has fallen, has become the habitation of devils and the hold of every foul spirit and the cage of every unclean and hateful bird. For all the nations have drunk of the wine of the wrath of her fornication, and the kings of the earth have committed fornication with her, and the merchants of the earth have waxed rich through the abundance of her delicacies. I heard another voice from heaven saying, come out of her, my people, that ye be not partakers of her sins, and receive not her plagues. For her sins have reached unto heaven, and God hath remembered her iniquities. Reward her even as she rewarded you, and double unto her, double according to her works in the cup which she hath filled to fill her double. How much she hath glorified herself and lived deliciously, so much torment and sorrow give her. For she saith in her heart, I sit a queen and am no widow, a queen of heaven, and shall see no sorrow. Therefore, she believes she's going to bring in the millennium through peace. Therefore shall her plagues come in one day, death and mourning and famine, and she shall be utterly burned with fire, and with strong is the Lord who judgeth her. The kings of the earth who have committed fornication and lived deliciously with her shall bewail her and lament for her when they shall see the smoke of her burning, standing afar off for the fear of her torment, saying, "Alas, alas, that great city Babylon, the mighty city, for in one day is thy judgment come." Now, verse 10 is a unique verse because many believe that's dealing with Rome. You could interpose Rome there as Babylon. I'm not going to argue that because that could be, but I would not be surprised that as Rome and the religion that she's associated with is destroyed, that there wouldn't be a surrogate city, literally maybe Baghdad or New Babylon or something right there in the Middle East today, that's established, and as all hell's breaking loose with Rome, religious Rome, physical Babylon, also, I would not be surprised, is not reestablished. I know people think that's crazy, especially right now with ISIS and all of that. But I'm just saying, Brian Hedges, this is a speculation, so I'm not going to get dogmatic because I know some people get fired up if I suggest that. But I'm not so certain that Babylon literally will not rise again. As Rome is destroyed in the tribulation, if there won't be a city ready. Literal Babylon, which she's going to be acquainted with. Which, by the way, where does the oil from Iraq go? Does anybody know? Where's the oil in Iraq go? Anybody know? It goes to Europe. We went over there and knocked out Mr. Saddam Hussein and got that oil going so we could pipe it to Europe. Just so you know, in case you didn't know that. And I'm not mad about it. I'm just saying, Americans say, "Oh, that oil's for us." No, we don't get our oil from there. That's not where America pulls the oil. That was for Europe, not for us. So anyway, just a side note. So there are connections between Europe and Babylon. That's why Gog and Magog, Russia, wants to get in on that. That's why they're in Syria today. Yeah, they want to run. They are running a pipeline through. Yeah. Croatia, Romania, they've tried to get it across all those places. That's partially why Putin went into the Black Sea to get a hold of Crimea. Crimea is probably which is in Ukraine. Yeah. Anyway, without getting into too much geopolitical stuff. So just that's a side note on verse 10. The bottom line is those 10, and keep on reading. The time, I don't have time to read all that. We're going to have to be done. But that's in a nutshell what's going on with this image. And Daniel's laying out the history of the Gentile nations. What's going to conclude it is when Jesus Christ returns at his second coming, Revelation chapter 19, and literally takes over the earth and sets up his kingdom. And that kingdom is going to be in Jerusalem. And he's literally going to return and put his foot on the Mount of Olives. It's going to split, just like we talked about a few weeks ago. And he is going to set up a righteous reign as a benevolent dictator. And he will have the strength on steroids of Babylon with a one world leader, and it's going to be Jesus, and he's going to be righteous. And those 12 tribes are going to be described just like they are in Ezekiel 34, and Israel will administrate the kingdom to the Gentile nations. And all those promises that he made to Abraham through Jeremiah are going to be fulfilled literally and physically to those Gentile nations. You guys tracking with me? No? Well, good. If I'm not, write down your questions so we can come back and talk about them next week, okay? And so God bless you guys. Thanks for being here. And I got to wrap up because the Royals are probably already winning, I hope. All right. Are they? 0-0? You didn't miss anything. You didn't miss anything. Thank you for your patience. And I hope I didn't confuse you. That's a lot, especially that last part where I tailed off with those twigs hanging off the foot. So it's a terrible picture, but I'll try to email everybody a picture, and that way you can have a better look at what we're talking about. Good question, Shane. Did that leave anything? Okay. One last thought before I leave. Interestingly enough, every one of these are now back in play. Iraq, Iran, financial crisis in Greece, Rome, and there's more prophecy of that iron mixed with clay that we're not going to get into tonight with Genesis 6. But just watch your Marvel comics and you'll be all up to date. All right, let's have a word of prayer and we'll leave. Heavenly Father, thank you.